Kanakistani.
Yes.
I am from the fair, friendly neighbor to the north, Canada. I'm from Canada.
You say it. I thought I would say Canada as well.
Canada.
Yeah, Canada.
Yeah. My fiance always says Canada.
Well, you are. So you are a Kanakistani. And what part of Kanakistan are you? Do you hail from?
I hail from Prince Edward Island, which is a tiny little island on the east coast. It's the smallest province in Canada.
And what part of PEI did you grow up in?
I grew up on the eastern part, just 15 miles east of Charlottetown, which is the capital. And I grew up on a farm there.
Oh,
and
cool.
It is fabulous and beautiful and wonderful, and anyone who hasn't visited should go.
You still escaped.
I did escape, but I escaped back on a frequent basis because I love it there.
Okay, well, I guess we'll let you stay.
Thank you, appreciate that.
Sweet. What got you started with writing and filmmaking and all that fun stuff?
Well, like many people, I came here to act, which I did, and have enjoyed thoroughly. I've been here in New York the best part of 20 years. And I had done a lot of fringe festivals in Canada, and a lot of my colleagues and, my fellow thespians were also writers. And I was inspired by them. And when I came here, I started to look around and see that off Broadway here was kind of like a gigantic fringe festival. And I thought, why don't I start generating some of my own work with the idea that, of course, I'm going to, star in everything and be a world internationally renowned, fabulous, triple threat everything. And I just started writing in the early 90s, and it's kind of escalated from there. I've done theater. I've had some of my theater pieces produced here, and I've done film. I went back to school and took digital filmmaking, and I've made 4 short films. Short being, fairly long shorts. A lot of them are like 20 minutes, and I had a video production company for a while, so I created 3 travel videos and a wonderful audio walking tour of New York, of Times Square.
Oh, is it still being used, or are they...
I haven't actually been marketing of late, only because for me personally, I felt the technology, especially at the time that I was really producing... really was moving at lightning speed, especially video technology. And so I decided I just wanted to go back to my roots and start writing again.
Okay.
Specifically. And plus, I've been traveling a lot of late, and I'm not necessarily in one place a lot. So I created something. I put together a bunch of writers that I had come across who I think are very talented, a lot of whom have... acting backgrounds.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And we created something called monologues2go.com. Mm-hmm. And it was basically kind of like a Chinese menu of monologues for actors, so that they can do it like a one-stop shopping thing, find a monologue that suits them really well. And we also do, if somebody didn't find a monologue on our site that they like, they could have us write monologue specifically for them. I just finished writing 3 monologues for an actress that I know.
Was this something that you fell into doing, that you and the others fell into doing, writing monologues and custom monologues for actors?
I was sitting with another writer, and she said, we should do these monologues, and maybe we can make a book, and possibly blah blah blah, and then she sort of lost interest in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of germinated with me for several years, and I thought at that time when I first started Monologues to Go, there weren't a lot of monologues on the internet that you could just get instantly at your fingertips.
Right.
Now there are more, but none of them are original, and they're kind of all over the place, and
varying qualities if they are original.
Yes, exactly.
Something I as an actor observe and looking for, like, monologues online, and some of them are extremely cringeworthy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wanted something that would be industry standard 2 minutes or 1 minute. Now we're starting to write 1 minutes because lot of people are preferring shorter monologues so they can do 2 in their allotted time for an audition. And we also wanted things that would show your range. We wanted comedic monologue. We wanted dramatic monologues. We wanted things that would appeal to all sorts of, we have age types, we go from age 7 to 70, and as far as categories, mm-hmm. we have everything from coming of age monologues, teenage pregnancy, prostitution, army, we have cop monologues, we have, there's one we call Crazy in Filene's, which is meeting a crazy person in New York City randomly in Filene's basement, and we have...
Wasn't everybody?
So there's just a smattering of something for pretty much anybody. And we're constantly writing, and we're taking ideas from people. Say, hey, there was a girl recently who said, I would like an environmental monologue. So now I'm writing some of those.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. But we have a great group of writers, and we're constantly expanding those, too. If anybody's interested in writing for Monologues to Go, we're certainly
open. Is there an email address they can contact you at? Or
info@monologuestogo.com.
That's info@monologuestogo.com.
Correct.
And is that the number 2 or the word T-O?
T-O. Thank you for asking that. Yeah, it's all written out, monologues to go.
Is that with a U-E-S?
U-E-S, yes.
The proper spelling of that. You know, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
What is the craziest monologue that what's the craziest or most ridiculous monologue you have ever written or have been asked to write for somebody?
Oh gosh, I mean, they're all sort of the comedy ones. The comedic monologues are there's one about coffee that's actually quite, it starts out very sensual and you think it's like this erotic monologue and it turns out to be about coffee because you know, people that are addicted to coffee just have this sort of romance with their coffee in the morning. So that one was a little wacky.
Like, has anybody asked you for a wacky, you know, something that was like, you just kind of went, wait, what?
Oh, we have ones about, like, how wacky, you know, wacky signs. Like, I think is it the state of Arizona where you can't throw grenades at passing cars? You know, I saw this thing in the back of a taxi one time.
That sounds like Arizona, but it also might be Texas.
It could be. So I was in the back of a taxi, and they were like wacky United States laws. And I actually found them so fascinating. I was on the way to LaGuardia, and I was disappointed because I got to the airport before they went through all the wacky laws. But I found myself writing down all these crazy little facts. And then I ended up writing a series of monologues about these weird... Like, there was one about dancing bears, where you are not allowed to go to a bar with dancing bears if the dancing bear is wearing a skirt. Like, it's crazy! Yeah.
Oh, I gotta love America.
Yeah.
God bless the U.S. of
America. Yeah. So, you know, there were some wacky monologues about that kind of thing. Okay. And we just wanted to have fun with, you know, whatever it was that we were writing so that the actor has fun with it when they're playing, especially the comedic ones, because it has to have a funny bone. It's got it.
Well, they are called plays, and we are called players.
Yes.
It's not what you think.
Yeah.
Going into the digital filmmaking, do you want to talk about how did you come across the subjects for your shorts and how did you put them together, you know, from, you know, how you developed your basic premises?
Well, the first one that I ever did was called Guardian Angel, and I'm very fond of that particular film. It's a 10-minute short, and it was the one that I did actually while I was studying. But it was actually loosely based on my roommate. I have 5 girlfriends here that we have all lived together. We have all lived with each other, but we have not all lived completely together. Like, I've lived with, you know, roommate A, and roommate A's lived with roommate B. I've lived with roommate B, but not A and B at the same time.
Oh, okay.
So we've all, at some point, you know, hung out together, and we're sort of like this little circle of girlfriends. So this one had this very interesting story about finding her adoptive mother, or her birth mother. She was adopted as a child, and she went looking for her birth mother and found her by through a very strange, I think it was her father, who actually happened to meet a neighbor across the hall when he was on the road, who was a relative of the birth mother. It was really a wacky, crazy thing. But she told me, she said, "Joyce, when I went to visit her for the first time, she wasn't home yet." And she said, "I ransacked that apartment." She said, she waited in, the woman had sent her a key. So she waited in the apartment. She said, "I looked for every kind of clue that I possibly could that would link me to her." So the premise of my my film is a highly educated woman who goes to meet her birth mother, but you don't find out why it is that she, you know, she finds a key and lets herself in, and she, you know, the birth mother doesn't necessarily know she's coming, and so she does this search of the apartment. And you're not really sure why she's in this apartment or why she's searching this mm-hmm. apartment, but she comes across all these things and she looks. And in this particular scenario, the mother does come home and she's a nurse. She's wearing her uniform. You can tell that she's a nurse. And there are these newspaper clippings of the daughter that the woman has collected the daughter's entire life. It's almost like she's been a stalker of this woman who mm-hmm. is a grown woman. I actually played that role. And in the end, they discover this. The daughter has had a horrific car accident at some time in her life, and there was a kidney donor. The kidney donor, she discovers in this movie, was her mother, her birth mother, and that she had given her mm-hmm. this kidney. So it's a very touching, sweet, lovely, complicated story, because it's complex in the emotion, the emotional range that this girl goes through in the discovery of who this woman is.
When we first started talking about doing this interview, you were talking about that you had a new short that you had done.
Oh, yes.
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 So,
this one.
You're going, yes,
I
do this!
Do.
Yes, yeah.
It's called Enchanted Forest, and it is a 20-minute piece that I think can actually be a wonderful little TV series for children. It was shot with 7 of my sister's kids. My sister has...
A little nepotism.
A little bit of nepotism.
Just.
Yeah. We had done another one previously mm-hmm. when the kids were little, and she said, "I'd love to do another one before they get big." And so I basically wrote this one around the kids. I kind of looked at what age they were and what I would be interested in mm-hmm. if I were that age. And I have always had a fascination with magic since I was, you know, able to... think. I just thought magic was the most amazing thing, and I think anybody who's in theater has a secret love affair with magic, because theater allows you to go to all these places that you can't go in your real life. So anyway, it is about a little boy who is he's 100 years old, and he is part elf and part leprechaun, and his parents, they lived in this beautiful wooded parkland, and his parents died when they were in their 700s, and so he has no living family. So what his parents did was they created this enchanted ring around him, ring of protection around him with all this magic. And he's also got a little white rat named Esteban, and Esteban goes everywhere he goes, and you know, he does things like he disappears, and Esteban can steal food for him when he needs it, and things like that.
Such a good lesson you're going to be teaching
him. Yes! Esteban's a good little rat, though. Anyway, the children discover him when they're playing a game, and their ball goes over the fence, and one goes to retrieve it, and they discover him. And they realize he's so lonely, and they adore him, and so they go about a journey of trying to figure out how to get him to come home and live with them. Of course, their parents don't know anything about this.
Of course not.
Yeah. So, and then they have to undo all the enchantments in order to get him to the safety of their treehouse that they're going to house him in.
But how does that... But won't he become like an an old man for real if they do that?
Well, we haven't, you know, it doesn't get that far that we have. That's the next episode.
Build that suspense, yeah.
No, he's still, you know, just because he comes out of the enchanted forest doesn't mean that he's not still enchanted himself.
Oh, okay.
They don't lose their magical powers just because.
But they do lose their musical powers.
They yes. He could never sing. But that's a whole other movie.
Do you have any words of wisdom or of insight for people that are looking to become writers? Is it a write what you know? Use your, because there's so many different schools of thought on writing. It's write what you know, imagination, you know.
Yeah. I say write from the heart. You need to be passionate about what you're writing about. And because in the writing process, you go through the love affair. You go from the first date to the divorce, because you know, and then fall in love again, because it gets very frustrating. The very first draft is the love affair, where you just think every word is the most amazing.
Perfect. I don't need to rewrite anything.
Exactly. Yes. And then the rewrite process becomes so cerebral that I personally get very frustrated in the rewrite process, because it's like undoing this house of cards that I have, you know, I've laid one card at a time, and then I have to take out the foundation and everything falls apart. And so that becomes, you know, they always say write from the heart and edit from the head. And so I think you need to be passionate about your subject matter in order to carry you through. I mean, some things get written very quickly. Enchanted Forest just came. I mean, it was incubating, and then it just, one evening I just sat it down, boom, and it was written. And I did some tweaking, but it didn't require major rewrites. I have another farce that I've been writing. It's called Dirty Laundry, and it's set in a New York City laundromat. And
stereotypes, yes.
And basically it is a metaphor for people's dirty laundry. It really has very little to do with actual laundry.
Yes.
And I've been writing it for several years, and it keeps coming together and falling apart.
Yeah.
So that's why I say write from the heart. But also, you need to be a good researcher. You need to, thank God for the internet now. It makes it so much easier.
Yes, indeed.
But right now I'm writing a musical about shoes. Shoes, the musical, a celebration of soul. And
it's a good thing I like bad puns.
But, you know, I want to have a little, you know, as obviously it's going to be a wacky, offbeat comedy, but I want it to also have substance, so I need to do...
Julie Taymor has to direct.
Yes, I have thought about that.
Well, she's already done, like, you know, The Red Sneaks.
Yes.
You know, her version of, you know, The Red Shoes. Yeah, you know, why not?
Why not?
Could you just see the masks and everything? The
puppeting shoes running across the stage. She would do fabulous work. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just saw Cirque du Soleil. I just saw Love in Vegas. And they come along with this little trailer of little rubber boots. This guy has these big yellow rubber boots, and he has this whole little wagon of rubber boots that it's like a little tricycle, and the boots just move themselves as he pulls it along. It's so cute. There's like 10 little boots. It's like the kindergarten class following behind you. It's very cute. Anyway, getting back full circle to that is, I need to do a lot of research about the history of shoes and the evolution of shoes and what is it, because I am right now struggling with mostly the premise of how am I going to tell this story, because I have all this information and now I have to wrap it into a whole bundle.
What you can do is, there are people who make shoes that you might want to talk to. Talk directly to shoemakers.
Yeah, I've talked to specifically women who are passionate about shoes, you know, and other people who are like, I don't get shoes. But it's a universal thing, you know. I mean, Sex and the City, That's where people found out about, you know, Manola Blahniks and
Le Boutons, yeah.
Yes, and all that stuff.
And all the shoes they will never, ever, ever be able to afford, yes.
Yes, but it's amazing.
Even in the thrift shop if they find them.
Even in the thrift shop if they find them, they're still overpriced.
Yes.
But it's amazing to me that
you... Well, there goes your backing on that one.
Yeah. Oh, God.
She didn't mean it.
But, you know, it's... what fascinates me is just the universal passion about shoes. I mean, it doesn't matter where you go. Women specifically are nuts for shoes. And some men, too. You know, so I'm trying to tap into that.
Pretty.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Have you entered any of your... Just to jump back on the filmmaking, because I can cut this up so it actually has, like, a coherence to it.
Okay.
Were any of your shorts entered into festivals?
Yes, actually.
And have they placed, win the show?
They have. I won an award at the San Francisco Short Film Festival.
Neat.
And I also got a lot of good, really good feedback. I went to the Michigan Film Festival in Flint, Michigan, where Michael Moore is from. And so it was very well received there as well. So, and now Enchanted Forest, I'm just starting to market that and put it into film festivals. I have another one called Blind Alley, which I never put it into film festivals because I was not as happy with... I love the writing, I'm very happy with. The performances, I'm very happy with. I'm not happy technology-wise with... There were lighting issues.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just never felt like it was that way high enough quality. But it ended up becoming a teaching tool at FIT, Fashion Institute of Technology.
But what not to do lighting wise?
Yeah. Not so much about lighting, but it became...
Yeah.
I've done master classes there where I teach them about production and how to break down scripts. And they use that script as a teaching tool to help these up-and-coming designers with learning production. And also how to costume, because it's a perfect teaching tool because it's 10 minutes long, but it has all these costume changes and beautiful costume changes. And it's about a girl. It's called Blind Alley. It's about a girl who is basically just searching in her life and always picks the wrong guy and, you know, tends to put herself in these places that good things do not happen to her. So anyway, it has had its own life in pedagogy, which has been kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you submitted your films to the festivals, how nervous-making was the process for you?
I learned that I am not good at marketing my own things. Mm-hmm. I can market other people's very well. But I've discovered that I really need to bring people on board to help me because I am so emotionally attached to my own work and it becomes like this life or death situation if I don't get into the Toronto Film Festival, you know, which of course everybody else in the world wants to get into the Toronto Film Festival. So I have learned to offload the things that I am too emotionally attached to. And for those filmmakers out there, a lot of people are aware of Without a Box, but if you're not, it is the best thing since sliced bread.
And what is...
It's a website that you can go to, and it helps you to create... It sort of puts you through the steps of creating a press kit electronically. And you basically, once you register Without a Box, then they have your press kit electronically, and then you can just... You search film festivals. They're like an umbrella for all these film festivals.
And what is the name?
Without a Box.
That's withoutabox.com.
Okay. Correct. Yes. And so you can. It's like one-stop shopping against like my monologue website. It's the one place you can go to, and you can find any film festival on any. You know, right now I'm looking for children's film festivals because Enchanted Forest is a
children's. Has a children's film festival.
Right, New York has a very good children's film festival. So, and you also have basically the window of a year to market your film, you know, because you go through the cycle of these film festivals happen in different, you know, spring is a big a big season, mm-hmm. but you can start whenever, and you just go a cycle of a year of entering film festivals. Now, for shorts, the fee is less than for a full length,
well,
for a feature.
Yes.
So there is a fee. There are film festivals that are free, and you can look for those as well. Obviously, the more well-known ones that everybody wants to get into have more competition and are more expensive to enter. But you just enter them, and then your press kit is electronic, boom.
Would you recommend that filmmakers that are just beginning to, like, enter their shorts or their full lengths into festivals start with the smaller ones and perhaps build a resume, so to speak? If it is accepted and it gets noticed at the smaller festival, then their next entry is likely to get noticed in the larger one because they've already got this track record.
I think they should not limit themselves.
Okay.
I think that they should go for the brass ring because, hey, you know, you might be Blair Witch. You might be the Blair Witch Project, you know, which was like this weird anomaly a bunch of years ago. But I think that you should shoot high, but you don't expect to get into Sundance. But hey, anybody can apply, and maybe if you are that particularly talented and you have that piece, maybe you'll get in, or you'll get into one of their workshop. You know, they have like writers. Just for scripts, you can also submit a script to Sundance. But the probability is you will get into one of the lesser-known film festivals, and that's how you build your resume.
Yeah,
you know, once you become an award-winning filmmaker, that puts you on a different level.
Right. That's most likely why I was asking about, you know, starting with the smaller festivals and building your award-winning and recognition that way, because if you submit a piece that's not that great to a smaller festival, it's not going to be as devastating,
right?
Or as like to Sundance or to Toronto, because somebody's going to remember you from that.
Yeah, I don't think it's realistic to only submit to the A-list film festivals, because everybody is. You know, the good and the bad about video filmmaking being digital filmmaking being so accessible now is that everybody with a camera thinks they're a filmmaker.
Yeah.
So that means there are so many submissions now. They're just the market is glutted with low budget filmmakers trying to get seen or get noticed. So what I would recommend, first of all, it can become very costly submitting. So you need to target your film to the right film festival. Don't just send to every film festival known to man, you know.
Yeah.
If you've got, if you've got a theme that's something to do with, you know, an African American type theme, then go to African American film festivals that promote that type of genre.
Right.
If it's a Holocaust theme, then look for Jewish film festivals that support those kind of themes. So don't just blanket everything, because it's just not wise financially. You will find that $35 and $35 and $35 adds up fast. So you need to target where you want to go. And so I would say that the majority of what you're wanting to submit for would be smaller film festivals, more like boutique film festivals. And then, you know, try for some of the big guns. Why not?
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt.
No. That's why I was asking. Let's see, what else do you want to talk about?
I think we've kind of covered the gamut. I mean, I'm really excited about my various projects. And each one that I talk about, I get very excited about. The one I'm really passionate about right now is monologues2go.com, because I just think that it's a fabulous I have put together these wonderful writers, you know, writers from the Actors Studio, writers, I have one writer who's from London, England, who's a very successful writer there. You know, I have seasoned writers, and then I have younger writers who appeal more to the 20-something crowd, and they're fresh monologues. They have a perspective of people who understand the craft of writing monologue, because just any monologue won't book you the job.
Right, you need the right monologue. That I'm never going to be the ingenue, so me doing Juliet
is not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen. Although I can play the ingenue in Commedia, because
I would like to see you play Juliet, just like a comedian. Just for the comedic value of it.
When I was attending the National Shakespeare Conservatory, they had us replay our classical monologues. And I am very good at dialects. And I figured, what the hell? I'm never going to be able to use it on stage. And what are they going to do? Tell me they made a mistake? So I'd have been introduced with my monologue. This is Rosalind from As You Like It. And why, I pray you, who might be your mother that you insult, exult, and all at once over the wretched? What? As by my faith, I see no more on you than without candle may go dark. And they're just sitting there with their jaws hanging open. And I could see at least one of them thinking, must kill her.
But that's fabulous.
But I'm never going to be able to use it.
No, but it's fun to.
It's
fun for a spoof, if that's what you want to do. But
I just got it down, you know.
But you never know when you...
This is Rosalind from Nigeria.
I heard someone do Rosalind once with a Newfoundland accent. Now, Newfoundland is on the very far east coast, off the east coast of Canada.
Yeah.
And it has a very thick accent. I mean, people who are not...
in Glasgow?
It's right in there. Like, I mean, there's a lot of, it's English, Irish, Scottish mix. So it's got that, like, you can't understand a Newfoundlander, a Newfie, they call them in Canada, if they're really speaking Newfoundlandese. And she did Rosalind with a Newfoundland accent when I was in college. It was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. And I thought, wow, you know, she has taken something, put a fabulous spin on it. And it'll be for a specific audition. But there'll be a time where she'll be able to use that.
See, but there will never be a time when I will be able to use that accent.
No, probably not. But it was fun doing it, right?
Oh, my God, yes. Yeah. Yes, yeah. It was awesome fun.
But that's what I mean. Like, you need an arsenal of weapons in your toolbox.
Have you done anything... Have you thought about doing any writing on shirts regarding your growing up on PEI and then escaping...
Escaping the island. Just when you thought the world was
boat
safe.
Me off.
Boat me off.
Get
the island.
Get out of here. I'm an American.
That's actually a great idea, because the island that I come from, as gorgeous and beautiful and wonderful as it is, there is not a lot of opportunity. There's getting to be more, but for younger people, they're having a problem with, I think they call it, there's a name for it, I think it's called ex-migration, where everybody just leaves when they hit the rite of passage and they go somewhere else to get their degree and blah, blah, blah. Eventually, a lot of us come home to roost for retirement years, but they're losing that great, you know, the richness of their youth.
Well, Anna Green Gables was written here, so...
They're very proud of Anne of Green Gables on Prince Edward Island, and they should be.
Yes.
Lucy Maud Montgomery, who wrote it in 1872, I believe.
And of course, the 70-mile yard sale.
70-mile yard sale. You know a lot about my island.
I have a friend that lives up on PEI.
Ah.
And so she's going to hear them. Yes, it is a shout out to you.
It is a beautiful island and a wonderful tourist destination. And go in July. Do not go in December or February is a really bad month to go.
Weather-wise,
go in July.
But it's off season.
Yeah, but it's got bright red cliffs. It's a very high iron ore deposit on Prince Edward Island. And if he should go there, by the way, which makes the cliffs rusty, so they're red. Buy my video at Founders Hall. It's called Your Guide Around Prince Edward Island, and it's a fabulous 1-hour tour of the island.
And you'll have something that nobody else from Kanakistan will have.
Kanakistan. That's right.
Eh?
A.
A. That's what Midlands. That's mid Kanakistan.
Mid Kanakistan.
Yes. Mid Kanakistan.
Yeah, what you said.
Yeah. What I. Yeah.
Although I do have to admit, my brother does say A a lot. I have stricken it from my vocabulary unless I really want to say it.
Just like I have stricken anything regarding Valley.
Valley, that's your.
No, I'm from Northern California, and I just like hate Valley. I will go white knuckled on you.
We don't want that. We don't want.
No. And so to wrap this up, I want to thank Joyce Story for being my guest today and here on At the Table.
And we are at a table, by the way.
2012. And just to give you the websites again, that is Monologues To Go, T-O, Monologues T-O,
G-O,
Go, yeah, Monologues To Go,
.com. We always say, think of it as a Chinese menu, only a whole lot more fun.
Yes, and you're not hungry for another monologue after an hour. Although you might be.
You might be.
And the other websites were withoutabox.com.
Correct.
And is there a third one or not?
I don't.
That was it.
Think so.
Tough luck. You'll have to get in touch with Joyce at info@monologuestogo.com. And thank you.
Thank you very much, Kelly. This is a lot of fun.
This is awesome. I have fun doing this. Thank you.